Last week's podcast, we decided not to talk about current situation on the pitch. And this one, we do talk a wee bit more about it, but it's myself and Hullboy talking about Peter Lowell. Now, of course, I know the old cliches about balance sheets don't win championships, etc. And, of course, that's more never been more prevalent than this season. But you need to raise money to pay the wages. And the more money that you raise, the more money you generate, the better wages you can afford and the better transfer fees you can afford. And so the success on the business side of things is always relevant to the success on the pitch in football, never more so now. And so Hullboy and I decided to review the 17 years of Peter as chief executive. It's a stewardship of two halves, we decided. And of course, everything leads to the current situation on the pitch. So, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Hullboy.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Where did we go wrong?
So, this week we saw the announcement that Peter Lowell, chief executive of Celtic, is stepping down after 17 years or so at the club. So I decided to get the only socialist accountant I know onto the podcast to talk about him. I'm joined by Hullboy. How you doing, Hullboy?
I'm good, thanks, Harry.
How's things in the Hull Riviera? I noticed there's something... there's a service on today at midday. I noticed you tweeting about yesterday.
Yeah, we've got it's not that widely known outside the city, but obviously Hull's known for its fishing. But every day there's an annual Lost Trawlerman's Day. 6,000 people died at sea on the trawlers and in shipping and fishing. So there's an annual memorial service, and normally it's held down at the old fish dock in Hull, but they're going to do it on online this year.
Yeah, you know, what really struck me actually was one of the pictures you recently tweeted was, you know, when I always think people like me, you know, live in a city, I'm not next to the coast. Glasgow used to have a maritime heritage, not for quite some time. When you hear of fishing boats going down, you think of, you know, something that's got a crew of three, four people that's really small. The one that really struck me was quite a substantial sized ship that you tweeted the other day that, you know, just never came back. So
yeah, and usually, you know, I mean, because they were deep sea trawler fishing up around Iceland and Norway. And even off the Newfoundland coast, and normally a trawler would have a crew of 25, and if you're in the middle of nowhere in a gale and it goes over, then tragically all hands are going to be lost.
Yeah, so on from there and on to talk about Peter Lowell, who for me there's a bit of a game of two halves from Peter and his reign at Celtic. He is, I think he'll be 62 in June. So I think the concept that there was roundabout now would be the time that he'd be stepping down, I don't think is unrealistic. And I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. I actually had a conversation with him in July 2019 about the principle of some changeover at the end of this season. And I remember him commenting, I said to him, that would be, you know, you're going to be about 62, that would be an opportune time to stand down. And he never said yes or no. The only thing he did say was, and of course, if we don't do 10 in a row, I'd have no option but to stand down. So, I suspect it's been, well, you don't make a change like that in the space of 2-3 months, so I suspect it has been something that's been long in the planning for the club. So I thought we'd have a chat about his time at the club. So he took over, he just had a very small overlap with Martin O'Neill, and he had been at the club before. So, Hallboy, what were your thoughts on what the financial position of Scottish football and Celtic were when he took over back 17 years ago?
Well, actually, I mean, maybe people don't notice as much, but when Martin O'Neill came in, obviously there was a lot of money spent. And at that time, people forget that actually there was more of a level playing field financially across the game between England and Scotland. So that meant two things, really. One is we could be on a kind of more of a level playing field in terms of signing players, and we could afford transfer fees much more readily. So it was before the Sky TV contracts went through the roof for the English Premier League. So I think when Peter Lowell came, we were in a position where we'd spent quite a bit of money, but our debt was growing. And I think at the time, the board had made a decision, particularly Brian Quinn, the chairman, that Celtic were going to start kind of cutting back on costs. And ultimately, that's probably why Martin O'Neill left, or one of the reasons why he left. Obviously, his wife was ill. But he could see that potentially Celtic weren't going to be paying any more big money transfer signings. And Martin O'Neill had got used to that. And also he could see what was happening in England. So I think Peter Lowell's appointment, at one level, it was actually quite typical that they would get in an accountant-type CEO figure. Because at that time, the emphasis would need to be on managing finances and cost-cutting, reducing the debt, etc. And to be brutally frank, in the first few years, that's exactly what happened in his time at Celtic.
Yeah, I mean, from memory, I tried to do a quick Google, but I couldn't be bothered reading all the annual reports. From memory, I think we were about £18.5 million in debt around the time that he came in. I think at the same time, Rangers were about £35 million in debt. It wasn't specifically the transfer dealings that were starting to drive us, because we'd sort of stopped the £6-7 million transfers. Yep. It was the wage bill. It was keeping Henrik, it was keeping John Hartson, it was keeping Chris Sutton on a par with the type of salaries that they could achieve down south. Because as you say, there was a bit of a level playing field that if we paid somebody £25,000 a week, that's pretty much what they would get at somewhere like Aston Villa at the time. And that's what was driving things. Do you think that was needed at the time?
Well, actually, you've got to remember that a lot of supporters were disgruntled, and obviously Martin left, and the word of the day, the buzzword of the day, was downsizing. And that chat was kind of quite rife across the support in terms of where Celtic were heading. But with hindsight now, the reality is that we actually did need to go through that process. And also, even though the football wasn't great under Gordon Strachan, or I never felt it was great, we actually still managed to kind of win trophies while we were doing that kind of downsizing, which was quite remarkable. And again, Strachan must have known in discussions with the board and Peter Lowell what the constraints were going to be for him.
And we reached the last 16 of the Champions League. We got through the group stages for the first time. So, it's a difficult thing for Strachan to do. We could talk about the style of football, but the principle of what he was having to achieve of keeping winning while also readjusting. Now, one of the few things I can remember my economics lecturer at university bemoaning about British business was that in Germany, an engineering firm is chief executive's an engineer. Yeah. In an entertainment company, chief executive's from entertainment, whereas in Britain, the chief executive's always an accountant. So I suppose appointing someone like Peter was just in line with the general type of culture that we perceived as good corporate governance in the UK, because that's in general what firms who in the UK want to be successful look to achieve, particularly when your chairman's a former deputy governor of the Bank of England.
Yeah, I mean, it is prevalent. It's not exclusive. I know some of the kind of pharmaceutical industry and health industry, and actually they do sometimes appoint CEOs who are actually kind of, they've got a science background or a medical background. But it is a strange one that a lot of PLCs just appoint, kind of somebody who's usually come through the roots of the big accountancy firms.
And the decision for Celtic to go down this route has pretty much been painted as being justified and exonerated by the demise of Rangers, who didn't go down that route. Rangers continued on the route that both Celtic and Rangers were on, and most of Scottish football were on prior to our appointment of Peter Lawwell. So do you think it was vindicated having a very cost-driven focus, trying to think of the kind way to put it. Someone who focuses on the cost first rather than the expenditure in Peter Lawwell.
Well, I think overall, the strategy has been vindicated, certainly domestically. But you can't look at these things in isolation. So actually the demise of Rangers kind of like it did strengthen Celtic's position in terms of being able to win things on the park whilst being kind of quite prudent financially. And I think, if we're kind of looking at the overall pattern, for me, what we found in the latter years, or what I found in the latter years, was that actually we needed... It wasn't just that we needed a new CEO, in my opinion, but we the club needed a new structure, and it needed a new dimension to it in terms of how you actually interact with the support and the commercial arm. And I think now most people agree that actually some of the ways in which Celtic do business, with the support and beyond, it looks kind of like a bit of an outdated, very tired model, and it also looks to me anyway like somebody who is immersed in financial management rather than commercial management.
Yeah, I mean, everything the Celtic do, I always look at it from the context of my own experiences, yeah, because that helps me try and rationalise decision making and things like that. And I worked for a business where there was someone who was a micromanager who transformed that business from being in one area of the market and transformed it, brought in different people, changed the outlook of the employees and really lifted that business. The problem then became, once it had achieved his thing, he should have been moved on to some other part of the business to transform there or move on. The problem was he just kept doing the same plan over and over again. It's the sort of analogy I sometimes put behind it was a bit like the Tory privatisation plan. That's, you may or may not agree with me, but some of the things that they privatised at the beginning, there was a logic behind the concept of privatising. You know, the telephones would be an example where People who are younger than us won't really remember. You can have whatever telephone you want, as long as it's red. Well, you're in Hull's. You're in Hull's, so it's a wee bit different. But you can have whatever telephone you want, as long as it's red, and it'll take 4 months for it to be fitted. That was the sort of joke around the way that the post office dealt with the phones. And now we've got the world. So that liberalisation and privatisation of the phone system. But for me, the problem that they then came up with was, that's all they knew what to do. Well, what do we do to raise some money? We'll privatise stuff. And so they get to the point where people joking about next they'll be privatising fresh air, because that was their only, just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And that was what my perception of Peter. He got the costs under control and he managed that. He stopped as our debt was 18 and a half and it was going up and up and up. He stopped it rising, then brought it down, then got us down into a financial model where we were self- we could self-funding, and but then that then became the be-all and end-all of what we were doing.
Yeah,
I remember writing a piece on the site before Rangers went bust, when we'd said we were a player trading club. I remember around about the time Rangers went bust, because I remember writing a piece on the site saying, we don't appear to have a strategy around, we seem to be doing player trading for the sake of doing player trading. There seems to be no strategy that we're trading, we're buying 2 million to sell at 8 so that we can then buy 4 million to sell at 10. So there was no strategy to, because this is all around having us being a last 16 Champions League team in 5 years' time and a last 8 Champions League team. And there was no strategy to that.
I think there's some little clues which, surprisingly, I don't think people have picked up on, but because there's been a lot of noise about the appointment of Neil Lennon after the cup final, and, you know, the infamous kind of, we spoke to him in the shower and appointed him in the shower. But actually, and everybody's remembered that, and people have got a view on that. But actually, one of the only other things that Peter Lowell said when he said, oh, it was a no-brainer, he said, Neil's got an eye for a player.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't a reason to appoint a manager. But what that told me was what Peter Lowell's main priority was. And that was, if Neil unearths a decent prospect, I'm going to be able to make a profit on that player 2 years down the line. And that, to me, is Peter Lowell's overwhelming strategy. And it's almost constant. And what that has also done, and you will know better than me, is it meant that you got an accountant as a CEO who increasingly started to dabble in the director of football arena, of thinking, I need to know whether this player has got potential, not in order to do things on the park necessarily, but if he's got the potential to have an increased value 2 to 3 years down the line, where I can cash in on that player, where we've paid £2 million or less, and we're selling for 15, 20 million. 2 years later. And I think that actually that is really Peter Lowell's legacy, that he set that strategy, and it's been repeated, but it's actually flawed. It's a flawed strategy.
You're right. And it gets back to my player trading for the sake of player trading.
Yes.
He's not saying, There's a nuance to this. Our perception from what you're saying, and I agree with you, that we're not seeing an eye for a player because that will allow me to have a better Celtic team that will allow us to then trade at the next level up, which will allow it's all about, because all I'm interested in is the player coming in and turning that player a profit for profit's sake, not for team development's sake.
Yeah.
And whilst, in theory, those two things should match. You know, if you're wanting to be able to trade players for the team to become better, you're wanting it to bring in a guy at one price and sell him at a higher price. But you're doing that because you're wanting to then make sufficient profit to be able to invest in the team, as opposed to our perception that that's just moving the same money around. I saw an interesting stat that if you strip out our Champions League money, our revenue's hardly changed in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Which, again, is my frustration at the lack of strategy for the club. And again, it was touched on by the eye for a player thing with Neil Lennon. As I keep getting back to, having an eye for a player is fine if it's Clough and Taylor. And in between taking training between 10 and 2, you're going on a wet Wednesday night to Stoke to watch a player. If we need to develop as a club, we need to play in the European arena as I want, and I think you do. You'd be looking more than just a guy that you can drive to after training to go and have a look at. You need to be able to look at players all over the world, because that's where everyone's buying. And if your competitors are buying from all over the world, you need to buy over the world. And so having one guy with an eye for a player, that also gave me a massive insight into how outdated our football model was.
Yeah.
That the world has moved on so much from having a Clough Taylor and a physio who rubs the players down.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, Brexit has got consequences for everything, but it's got consequences for football. And a lot of people don't know yet, because it's only just been introduced, but there is now a player point system. And the kind of the old way in which the club used to find players by going into kind of Scandinavian countries, etc., that's going to become increasingly challenging. So the model that Peter Lowell has put in place, that model is no longer fit for purpose. And I know people have spoken about it before, but Celtic have to have a worldwide scouting network. They are going to have to unearth players from beyond Europe, because the only other alternative is to kind of start fishing in the British lower in the English lower leagues, which is incredibly competitive, and by definition, because the English football leagues will also be under the same points scheme, they will be looking for talent that's closer to home.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about Ben Davies, and he could end up being a good player. And I don't want to decry him beforehand, but my gut feel is a 25-year-old who's playing in the English Championship, who hasn't been picked up by one of the wealthier English Championship teams or one of the mid to bottom half English Premiership teams, when he's on their doorstep, might not necessarily be the calibre of player that's going to have us qualifying for Champions League football. Just by default of where you're looking, and as you say, the nature of that sort of market. For me, the day that we declared we were a player trading club was the day that we should have changed our model, because that then necessitates sourcing talent at a value that will enhance the team. And again, people often throw up, you can't get the maximum value for a player playing in Scotland, because we go to Perth and we go to Dingwall in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people. Porto, Benfica and Sporting Lisbon go to similar size clubs with similar size attendances. The reason they get 30, 40, 50 million pounds is not because of what that guy does against the lesser teams of Portugal. They get that money because of what their guy does against Dortmund away.
Yeah.
Against Ajax away, against Atalanta away, and against Sporting Lisbon, against the others of Sporting Lisbon. So it's no different. If we were competing in Champions League football, or if we had the European season we had last season, you get top dollar for players because He's played well against Rangers, and he's played well against in cup finals, and he's played well in those European games. That's how they're going to be judged. And if you have a wider scouting network, you're looking for players who will perform in that environment.
Mm. Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I think that's how Van Dijk and Dembele were judged. It was on European performances. You knew it was on European performances. That's how the value went up. And if you are in Europe and you're going beyond the group stage in the Champions League, then all of your players, not just one player, all of your players are going to be more noticed. So what you do is you enhance squad value, not just individual player value.
Yep. So, overall, because I'm now going to go into what do you think the strategy is. Overall, prior to this season, how would you judge Peter's performances as chief executive of Celtic?
Well, I mean, I tend to focus on, you know, some of the backroom stuff, but actually, the way I look at it is you've got to say, well, if there was somebody else in that position for, let's say, certainly the last 5 years, maybe longer, would we have been any different? And I actually think that on the park, the answer to that is no. I think we would have been roughly where we were. Where we are up until this season, you know, winning the league still and other domestic trophies. But who knows, with a new CEO, let's say 5 years ago, we may well have had kind of like fresh things on the park, different things on the park. And I know it's hard to look beyond the quadruple treble, but we may well have done more in Europe. Who's to say that we would have made a different appointment than Ronnie Dyla, for example, and actually achieved more in that period? Because it was pretty clear why Peter Lowell appointed Ronnie Dyla. Again, it was more about kind of like, This is a period in Celtic's history where we can tighten the purse strings and build up cash balances, which is what he did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it was a time in Celtic's history to invest.
Yeah.
The easy to say, because I'm not in charge of trying to raise the finance for it, but the main stand's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 10 years' time, it'll be 60, and 15 years' time, it'll be 65. You get my point. Every day, it's getting closer to the point where we've got to do something with it. For me, that was the period that you could have invested in, not increasing the capacity in the main stand, but having a 21st century main stand. That we knew that there would be a Rangers in the top flight again at some point after they went bust and they reformed. We knew eventually, and they are the only club in Scotland who have the size of support that at some point could put together a challenge to compete with us. So you know that that's coming. So for me, you spend the time that they are not there building the foundations that when they arrive, you blow them out of the water. Now, Peter's argument might be, well, our foundation that we built was money in the bank, so that this summer we kept the whole squad together and we gave the manager money to spend, so that his net spend in his 18 months in charge was something like 35 million quid. Mm. We've lost money in the transfer market in the last 4 years.
Mm. Well, the other thing as well is it's the people that you invest in as well. And, you know, we've just been talking about the kind of scouting network. Peter was quite good on projects that were kind of bricks and mortar projects. So things like Lennoxtown came along. But actually, in the same way that you talk about the main stand needing upgrading, there are things that need upgrading at Lennoxtown. You know, we can talk forever and a day about the players going out to Dubai. But actually, one of the biggest criticisms of Lennoxtown is the lack of all-weather pitches.
Yeah. I mean, I know when we started at Linux 10, we didn't have the financial clout to actually complete Linux 10.
No.
We didn't have the money in the bank at that point. And the idea was we were going to sell Battlefield to whichever house builder is built next door to Battlefield, can't remember, Keir Homes, I think it was. We were going to sell Battlefield to them so that we build Linux Town on the tick and then sell Battlefield to repay that. But there was a transformation in our finances. I think we had a couple of runs in European football. I don't know whether it was by the time we finished Rangers had gone bust, but anyway, and we'd sold a couple of players. Our finances were transformed by the time we finished it, so we didn't need to do Battlefield. But the other point, when I think of my own circumstances, when I worked in a company with a micromanager, really good guy, but he took forever to make a decision. Yeah. And one of the other things that famously you hear back from people is we miss out on transfers because Peter tries to save a penny here and a pound there.
Exactly. Well, that was the other point I was going to raise about his legacy, really, is that one of the reasons why we have underperformed in Europe is because we've not assembled our squad soon enough for the qualifiers. And it's not like these qualifiers are, you know, kind of suddenly thrust upon us. We know what the cycle is. We know that we are going to be playing football earlier in the season than many other clubs. And we need to have our squad in place, you know, to kind of to get over those hurdles.
Yeah, I'm not ready. And but in Linux Town, we shaved a fraction off the cost by having a three-quarter size indoor pitch. And so it's my understanding is it's not really used because it's a three-quarter size indoor pitch.
Exactly.
And so, again, getting back to that, we seem to take forever. So the plan is then put in place to build a couple of all-weather indoor pitches and put them at Battlefield. The reason for Battlefield is twofold, as I understand it. One, the cost at Linux Town would have been bigger because it would have had to cut into the hillside to be able to do it. And secondly, it then meant that you had a facility, if there was any snow that created a problem of getting to Linux Town, you then had this all-weather indoor facility at Battlefield that was closer to the pitch and to the Celtic Park. That was, but we haven't built it yet. It's still not there. And whether we will now build it because we've blown all the cash that was in the bank because of the because of COVID, which then gets on to this season. And despite his hard-nosed reputation, he's actually not really been a grasping the nettle type person on managers. The thing that amazes me most about Neil Lennon currently being Celtic manager is he left last time because both parties were quite happy for the relationship to end. We didn't get rid of Lennon. We were just hopeful that he would go. We didn't get rid of Ronnie Dyler. We were hopeful he would go. And then what's your thoughts on how Neil Lennon has managed to stay in charge for so long this season?
Where do we start? I think it's just a kind of, it's almost like a marriage of convenience between Peter Lowell and Neil Lennon. Particularly now that we know that Peter Lowell was definitely going to be leaving at the end of this season, because actually Peter Lowell can protect and partly save, or he probably thinks that he can partly save some of his reputation by keeping Neil Lennon in the job, so that Neil Lennon takes all the flak. But that, to me, that's not corporate in any way, shape or form. And I may have completely misread that. But behaviourally, there's no other logical reason why Peter Lowell has kept Neil Lennon in the job, other than the financial imperative of having to pay him off. But in the grand scheme of Celtic's finances, I can't see that it would be that much to pay him off.
Well, it was I think it was Stephen McGowan in the Daily Mail had a figure of £300,000 being the pre-agreed termination fee in his contract.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Neil Lennon's not on a contract that was anywhere like what Brendan Rodgers was on. And you've got to remember, it wasn't just Brendan Rodgers. It was, you know, kind of the people that he brought with him as well would have been on pretty decent money.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't see any other reason why Peter Lowell hasn't sacked Neil Lennon. Don't get me wrong, Neil Lennon should have resigned a long time ago. But in football, managers have got a history of not resigning. So unfortunately, a CEO of a football club has to sack the manager. And that's what should have happened. And I think the PR of this, in terms of the attitude towards the support, has been absolutely diabolical. I mean, we're 31st of January today. The last that we heard was there was going to be a review in January. Well, we've not heard anything about that. And the only news that we've got is that the CEO has decided to step down in June. Quite frankly, after yesterday, I think the CEO should be stepping down immediately. And we should be doing everything to get the new guy in from the Scottish Rugby Union. And the last thing that Peter Lowell should be doing is he should be sacking Neil Lennon.
My only thoughts, because you're trying to rationalise the thought process of other people based on what you can see of their previous behaviour.
And I
think I've said on here before that I've been thinking through that perhaps they either haven't spoken to someone, or they've sounded people out or spoken to people and they can't get who they would really want in now, and their perception is that any sort of caretaker is a greater risk than continuing with Neil Lennon. I'm not saying they're right, I'm just trying to ascertain what their rationale for keeping him in place is, and that based on that, perhaps once the league's mathematically impossible, that's the point that they would turn around and say, well, Neil will be leaving at the end of the season and we're talking to candidates. That's my thoughts. Then when Peter goes, announces this week, I then wonder if the delay is because they want the decision to be starting at the very top. There's a change of Peter, and then from there down, that they'll be talking about what the changes will be through the club, and they were not wanting it to be, well, wait, they were not wanting a furore around, wait a minute, the old chief executive sacks the manager and appoints a new guy, shouldn't that be the new chief executives? That, again, I'm just trying to think of the rationale behind it.
I understand all those variables, but actually, if they're thinking that through, what they patently seem not to have realised is that footballers are quite selfish individuals, and there are a myriad of examples that when a squad of players knows that a manager is either close to leaving or will be leaving, not saying they're down tools, but they're not motivated. And you know, I've heard lots of reasons as to why they're not motivated. In the modern era, a lot of them have agents whispering in their ears, but their own futures are more uncertain because that manager has possibly brought them in. But yesterday was absolutely telling evidence that these players don't want to play for this manager.
Yeah.
And so what's happening is that the longer that Peter Lowell and Neil Lennon stay in position, the more the squad is going to be demotivated and will self-destruct. And we're seeing that before our eyes.
Well, I've said for a couple of weeks now, we now have that dilemma of the requirements and motivation of the manager is at odds with the requirements of the club.
Yep.
The manager's requirement is to salvage as much of his reputation as possible in the hope that he can get another job after this one. And so, therefore, he's going to go for the more experienced players. Because that's what people do when there's a crisis. I'll go for the experienced guy because at least I know what he's going to do for me. It's a bigger risk going for the youngsters. The clubs, the requirements of the club is to plan for, is to start now. This season's gone, so it's to start now planning for next season. So that means the new signings who haven't settled need to get as much game time as possible to retain as much of the value of them that we spent on them, so that if they're no good for the new manager, when we can still get something back for them. Or, but secondly, we might find that the value we paid for them was worthwhile and the issue was the current manager, and we can get some value, added value on the pitch from them.
Mm-hmm.
And to play our younger players and see if there's any youngsters in the academy system that can add value to the squad next season in terms of a value on the park. So our club's priorities are planning for next season, and our manager's priority is saving as much of his reputation. And those two diverge in terms of who you would put on the pitch. You don't play Tom Rogic. You don't bring Tom Rogic on at halftime, a guy who hasn't really performed now since that famous cup final goal. Yeah. You don't bring him on in the hope that he'll suddenly do something he's not done for 3-4 years. You play Ayeti because we've signed him and we spent £5 million on him, and he's either going to make it or not, but we need to find that out. You play Ewan Henderson because he's now at that age, he's 20, 21, he's now at that age, he's either going to make it at Celtic or he's not. You play Karamoko Dembele because he's got a few months left in his contract, and we're either going to give him a new one or we're not. You know, that's what you do at this stage.
Exactly, and I think all of that, you know, because the main theme of this is about Peter Lowe and whether he has a legacy, etc., is Peter Lowell is not evaluating Neil Lennon's performance on a football basis. Neil Lennon has been outcoached by nearly every other Scottish Premiership manager this season. In games, Jim Goodwin yesterday outcoached Neil Lennon. And that's been happening over and over again.
I'm not saying Gary Caldwell's a footballing genius or a successful manager, but if Gary Caldwell is making the observation, I've seen Jim Goodwin's teams play, and what he does is he matches up with your system to make it impossible for you and stops your system performing, and then tries to do things on the break. If Gary Caldwell knows that, then either Celtic. If Neil Lennon's looking around and thinking, right, my players are not performing, that we should be able to play the same system as St Mirren, impose our system and win, then I need to tweak mid-game. I need to tweak our system.
Yeah.
And he had the personnel that he could have tweaked it and changed it to a 3-5-2 or a 4-2. You know, he could have done something that made St Mirren have to react, but he didn't. No. I mean, all he did when he took Griffiths off and put Rogic on, he put Elianussi up front instead of Griffiths.
Well, the other thing as well is, and I mean, I did comment, this isn't a hindsight thing, I did comment on this at the time when he first came in as caretaker. We had a system. You could argue whether that system was still as strong, but Brendan Rodgers created a football system and the squad played to that system. And there was great emphasis on every player, in theory, in the squad, could play in every position in that system. When Neil Lennon came in, he said, "I'm not going to change the system." And then he added a but, and the but was that he was going to. I think he said, "But we need to be more direct." And my initial thought was, "Well, you're going to change the system." And at the point that you tinker with a system and don't put your own system in place, all you do is, over time, is the system unravels and dismantles. And that's exactly what we've seen in Neil Lennon's time at the club. that really he's not put his own system in place. He's just slowly but surely dismantled the system that he inherited.
All you're doing is doing no system, because you're not doing the last guy's system and you're not doing your own system.
Yeah, and I tweeted out of exasperation yesterday, but I think there's probably something in it that I think Neil Lennon literally is not coaching the players because he doesn't have a system. He's just picking a team, telling them to go out there and hoping that the quality of the players on the park will win the day.
And
it just hasn't happened. And actually, you know, going back to Jim Goodwin, Jim Goodwin's not a stellar coach by any means. But he is coaching in a kind of in a modern way. He's studying what needs to be done in modern football. And Neil Lennon clearly isn't doing that.
One of the comments yesterday from Neil Lennon was, this season, you know, we were talking about he's not been able to get a response from the players. And he said, you know, we've tried 4-2-3-1, and we've tried 3-5-2, and we've tried 4-3-3, and we've tried four with a diamond and a two. And I thought, and that is part of the problem. It's as I joke about, you know, I don't play computer games anymore, but 20 odd years ago, if I played Football Manager, that's what I did. Well, that didn't work. I'll just try something else. Well, that didn't work. I couldn't be bothered with the hard work that you were supposed to spend hours on this computer game to make it work. And that then is an indication if you're trying all those systems, the players are not getting coached on those systems.
Yeah, exactly right. And they, you know, they're all human beings. They just become demotivated and you get mixed messages. You get, you know, what am I doing this week? Well, you're not doing the same as you did last week. We're doing something different this week. Well, you know, where does that leave players?
And I'm not a coach. I'm not a football coach. And we can talk about systems. But I'm well aware of the principle that the way players would move about the park and the way they would interact with their teammates and the way they would pass the ball will be different in a 4-2-3-1 than it will be in a 4-4-2. And that requires coaching. I mean, I get the point, in the middle of a game, you should be able to tweak it and slightly change the system. But to be playing different systems week in, week out, you're going to need concerted coaching systems on that. But we'll move on. As you said, this is mainly a Peter Lowell thing. So for me, one of the really interesting things is not just that Peter's going and we've got a new appointment, but the new guy's not an accountant. The new guy's not from a football background in terms of his last business. The new guy's a comms guy. Do you think that's an indication that there might be other structural changes in the business coming?
Well, I would definitely hope so. I mean, I think, you know, in theory, the CEO should be, you know, we have a finance director at the club. So there's no point in having a CEO that is another finance director, because the CEO should have another kind of skill set that says, well, actually, I can rely on my finance director to look after the finances. So I think it's significant that we've gone for somebody who isn't an accountant, and somebody who is from outside of football, because he obviously understands the commercial and he'll understand the retail side of things and the, I hate to use the phrase, but the customer side of things, because he's obviously got a bit of a track record at Scottish Rugby Union with that. I think the big thing for me is that if he can very, very quickly start to fact find about how modern football clubs are structured organisationally, and it won't be that difficult for him to find, but he needs to do that fact finding and he needs to come up with two or three different models and options of how behind the scenes the football is structured. You know, and what I'm talking about there is, does he go with a director of football? who then recommends the coach. What's the scouting system like that we spoke about earlier? What's the science, the sports science infrastructure like? And for me, those are all the things that he needs to look at. And I think one of the biggest things is, which you've mentioned the word micromanagement a few times with regards to Peter Lawwell, you have to have a CEO who brings people in who he then empowers and trusts to get on with their jobs, but then holds them to account.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is a big change for Chris Mackay, the finance director.
Yeah.
So for me, this is a big change for Chris Mackay because
Can I just say, we've got Chris Mackay as finance director. We're getting Dominic Mackay as CEO. So can you think of any Mackays who might be a football manager?
I tell you what, I'd be getting worried if I was one of the if I was Michael Nicholson, I'd be changing my name. but yeah, we've got Chris Mackay, finance director. So I would expect he will have far more expectation on what he's delivering for the board. We've got Michael Nicholson, who's the company secretary, who I know would deal with the detail of the contracts when the player contracts, but I would have thought now he'll be expected to step up to the plate in terms of if one of our criticisms with Peter was he was a director of football in actuality, if not in name. So some of the governance and player contract aspects, Michael Nicholson will no doubt be expected to step up to the mark and do that. But you're right, for me, this has got to, and if we're changing manager, unless we are going to blow everybody out of the water and go for a huge name manager and say, do you know what, we are going to give you free rein, a bit like they did with Brendan, because I think he got more, and Martin. But that's a risk, as we saw when Brendan left, and he takes his guys with him.
Yeah.
And that for me is too big a risk to take. So there is a hope being left to Peter was the director of football in actuality, if not name, because there are no circumstances this guy's coming from the SRU. They don't sign players.
No.
They don't have a player that they are signing for. They're not negotiating with other clubs and agents about players. It's a very different sporting governance role that he's been in. Maybe they're bringing him in. SRU seem to be closer to the Scottish government than we are. I would have thought from communications, SRU's big role surely got to be with their commercial partners and their broadcast partners. Mm-hmm. So there's a void in our business going to be created on the football.
Absolutely.
On the football side of things, if that's what Peter did. And for me, this is the ideal opportunity to bring in the head of football operations, sporting director, football director, whatever title and remit he's got, but somebody who's in charge, as you say, of the academy, who's overall in charge of the academy, the scouting network, the facilities, liaises with Michael Nicholson on the contracts for the new players coming in, and the first team manager focuses on managing the team. That, for me, this is the ideal opportunity, because you've got a guy, it's not like we brought in somebody who was chief executive of another football club. This guy patently has got a skill set. It's not a criticism, he's got a skill set missing because he's not been at a football club.
Exactly right. And I think the other thing for me is that Peter Lawwell, he's almost created a structure of convenience for him at Celtic. And what that has meant as well is that, and you can read all the blurb in the annual report about Celtic's corporate governance, and on paper you would think, well, this is just perfect. But the reality is that we've got a board of non-executive directors who have been there far too long. And even our own memorandum of association and articles show that they've been there far too long, because they're getting re-elected every year by themselves.
Yep.
So there has to be a complete change at boardroom level as well. And I know it's not for the CEO to select new non-exec directors, but obviously a CEO will have a say in who gets appointed. But we need new blood on the board. So, and something that leads to the club at that level and through the CEO being much more transparent to the supporters. Because at one level, this season, people have just been throwing their hands up and saying, what's going on?
I mean, the thing about what you've said there, I mean, it's obvious to me the Neds have been there too long and they need to change.
Yeah.
And the chief executive is changing and the manager needs to change. And my only concern about the business is that's an incredible amount of risk.
I agree.
But to change all of those in one go.
But actually, that's of Peter Lowell's doing. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned before about succession planning. And I was, in the early days, I was a big supporter of Peter Lowell. I could see when Brian Quinn was chairman why we needed to rein the finances in. But Peter Lowell should have gone probably halfway through the nine in a row. He's been here 5 years too long. And if I'm thinking that, because I know other people wanted him gone sooner, then, you know, he certainly shouldn't have held on to think that he could be part of the legacy of winning 10 titles in a row. And I think there's been a lot of self-interest in Celtic for far too long.
If we are going to make all these changes, and this appointment is an indication. I can see there's an argument for both ways. This appointment is an indication to me, as we just talked about, that various people need to step up to the mark, and it creates a void in our current business structure that needs to be filled with individuals. So it's an indication to me that there's a transformation coming. Equally, as we've just talked about, the risk involved in changing all of those moving parts at the same time is an indication to me that we might not do it. So I can see it going both ways. And I would hope that it's the major change one that we go down. And of course, there is always that thing of be careful what you wish for. You could have another Alan McDonald as chief executive. So we need to wait and see. The one thing I would say, I don't think you could pay me enough money to be chief executive of Celtic. I think being chief executive of Celtic must be like being a politician. That there's a small group of people who, no matter what you do, you're perfect and you're brilliant. And there's a group of people that, no matter what you do, you are shite.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reality is that it's somewhere between those two extremes.
Yeah. So what's your expectations in the next couple of weeks to do with Celtic and the manager's position? Do you think we'll see a new manager by Tuesday night? And then what would be your overall summary of Peter's time in charge?
I'm not sure we will see a new manager this week, but we should. And either the manager should resign or he should be sacked if he won't resign. I'm absolutely convinced of that, and what we do for the rest of the season, I'm not saying it's not that important, but actually we can afford to go with some kind of like short-term caretaker operation, and we should do that. I think the other thing for me, which we touched on earlier, is I think Peter Lowell, having announced that he's leaving, I think he should step down. If it is feasibly possible for us to get Dominic Mackay into his role earlier, I'd even go with some shadowing if that was needed. Some kind of handover period. But it's. We need to be planning for next season now. And I think what what we've got this season is, my overall view of Peter Lowell is that he was here too long. He was at Celtic too long. And to a certain extent, winning all those trophies, absolutely fantastic on the park. But I think he was basking too much in all of that success and not thinking about the future of the club beyond that success. And to a certain extent, the reason why we've crashed and burned this season is because I think Peter Lowell very often has done the convenient thing for Peter Lowell rather than the long-term succession planning for Celtic Football Club. And I think he made the wrong appointment, wrong permanent appointment. I had no problem with Neil Lennon coming in temporarily, but he made the wrong appointment permanently. And why he did that, I don't know.
Do you know, some of the criticism of Peter of late, I've often thought maybe not, no need to be so vitriolic because that's just who he is. It sort of reminds me of the scorpion and the frog thing. Peter is a penny-focused accountant.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't have any vitriol towards Peter Lowell, and I certainly don't have any hatred towards him, but he's just got he got cushy in the job.
I agree. And with that, I will say, Hull boy, thanks very much.
Cheers, Harry.
No.
So I hope you enjoyed that podcast. It was reference to Ben Davis in there, and I was thinking about editing it out because obviously time overtakes us, and here was me saying I really don't see a mid-table championship player being the solution and Liverpool go and sign him, so what do I know? But the principle still stands, because anyway, I'm sure you get the point of what I was making rather than the specific player. Enough of me. That was Hull Boy with me, Harry Brady, talking about Peter. I'm sure we'll be talking about Dominic Mackay soon, and hopefully we'll be talking about other changes that will be coming, because, as I said in that podcast, I just can't see a situation where he changes, the chief executive changes, and the football model and structure of the club doesn't. So, here's hoping. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Hull Boy, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien. Aujourd'hui, ça...